Welcome to Ask the Experts, a monthly podcast taking on the latest questions around healthcare legislation and compliance.
Welcome to another edition of Ask the Experts, the podcast where we make employee benefits and compliance simple and practical. And today's topic, we are going to dive into some key concepts that often confuse employers and employees alike. The topics for today is POP, P-O-P, Section 125, cafeteria plans, FSAs, HRAs, and HSAs. Joining me today is Shelley Bloom, the Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. Shelley is our seasoned compliance expert and is now going to enlighten us on all these wonderful acronyms. Thank you for being here, Shelley.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for having me today.
Shelley, when we were talking about these topics, we both realized that this could be very confusing, especially with all these acronyms and things like that, and people generally can be confused. So let's start with the basics. What is a POP and a Section 125?
Yes, when we talk about all these, they can be confusing. So I find myself talking about the acronym, and then I always explain what the acronym is.
Right.
So let's start with this. POP is a premium-only plan, and most employers use these because employees must make some kind of a contribution to their employee benefits, whether it's health insurance, dental, vision. They need to make some contribution, and it's better for them if they do it on a pre-tax basis. So that's what the premium only plan is. It's something that they set up with an administrator to have this premium only plan. The first time that you jump into this, you need to acknowledge by your signature that your employer is allowed to take pre-tax dollars from your pay and to have it go toward the cost of any of those health plans that you have. The Section 125 plan or cafeteria plan is IRS related. It is about how we deal with those pre-tax dollars. As I said, they can be for benefit plans. They can also be for paying for benefits that you can pay, like deductibles, co-insurance, co-pays, and they would be approved and you can use those pre-tax dollars.
So to state the obvious again, the big advantage is tax savings, right?
Absolutely. It's a tax savings for both the employee and the employer because it does reduce your total gross income when you put those dollars away to pay for your contributions to your employee benefits plans. It reduces your gross, and that is what you pay taxes on and what the employer pays taxes on.
Now, for our next segment here, we also want to discuss cafeteria plans. What does it mean specifically for employee benefits?
Cafeteria plans, we talked about them a little bit already, but it's a menu of different things that you can choose. So that's why it gets the name cafeteria plan. You can pay for your health insurance, your dental and vision coverage. You have a flexible spending account, and that's where you can pay for co-pays, co-insurance, deductibles, any of those things from there. You can also set up a dependent care account. And I do want to bring up with the dependent care accounts that under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was passed in July of 2025, there is an increase in the dependent care amount. It has been $5,000 for a long time. It is now up to $7,500 for a single person or those married filing jointly. But basically, the employee gets to pick whatever they want to put dollars to suit their needs. They put so much money away. They can spend it on any of these things.
So we had just talked about the cafeteria plans. And one of the benefits of that, with being the employee, being able to pick what type of health insurance they want, dental or vision, but also another, I think, key component and is very helpful to people is the flexible spending account, also known as the FSA. So let's dive into that. What makes a flexible spending account so unique, Shelley?
Well, a flexible spending account, again, allows employees to determine at the beginning of the year how much money they want to put into this flexible spending account. The maximum in 2026 is $3,400. So an employee can choose that maximum amount or any amount under that. Also, employers can contribute to this account. You'll find that sometimes they do at the very beginning when the flexible spending account is a new offering and they're enticing people to join. Excuse me. After that point, you don't often find employers putting dollars into it. In addition to that, it is a use it or lose it. So you have the whole year to spend those dollars. They have to be used within the plan year. If not, they revert back to the employer to keep whatever dollars that the employee put in that they didn't spend. The employers can allow a small rollover or a grace period, but both of those are limited. So in 2026, the maximum carryover dollars are $680. If there is a grace period, it's a short period of time where the employee can use whatever dollars are left in their account, but they have to use them by that grace period. But remember, carryover and grace period are not automatics into setting up an FSA. It's up to the employer. If the employer doesn't want to offer either of those, they don't. There is a plan, a written plan. So if an employee wants to know what is included in their flexible spending account, all they need to do is ask their employer for a copy of the plan. The administrator who is working on the plan with the employer will help to create that and provide that that can be distributed to the employees.
With the flexible spending accounts, I always find that a lot of people are confused with this. The employer offers it, but the employee does not take it. And it is, I believe, a great tool for people to help, especially with copays, unexpected bills that you get from the hospital or doctor or healthcare provider. And it's also good for dependent care. So why do you think there's so much confusion around flexible spending accounts?
I think it's that people don't understand what it is, and they don't understand that they can monitor their expenses.
Right.
And a lot of times there's a worksheet that an employer will hand to the employees during the open enrollment. And it's a way to be able to look backward at, you know, what was your year like last year? How much did you spend on copays for yourself and your family? What about coinsurance? Do you have a coinsurance amount? Or deductibles, or a maximum deductible that your family needs to meet? And, you know, are you experiencing a lot or little? So, you know, it's better to put a little bit in. And once you see the benefits that are there, both from the tax savings and being able to pay it oftentimes with a debit card that you would get from your administrator, when the doctor says, okay, your visit, you owe this much, you present that card. It's paid from your account. And I think the nice thing here too is that if I say I want to put $2,500 away in my flexible spending account on day one, I'm going to put that in over the course of the time that I'm working with my employer. So a little comes out with every pay, but that $2,500 would be available to me on day one. So if I want to schedule a surgery on January 10th, and I know I'm going to use most of that $2,500 for my deductibles and copays, my employer has to front those dollars in order that I can get my $2,500, and then they get reimbursed every time I have a payroll. So there's a bit of a risk for the employer that if I use that and then I leave my employee with that employer, then they're kind of stuck holding the bag. But on the other side, as I already talked about, if I leave the company and there's money there, I have a short period of time to spend it. Otherwise, the employer gets it. And if there is no carryover or grace period, the employer gets those dollars too. So there's a balancing act with this. But I think for most employees, once they try it, and you don't have to do the maximum, you can do a short, small amount, and you see what it's like, then you're going to use more and more of it.
Right. The key understanding of this is, of course, education. You had mentioned something that I found is critical with FSAs, doing the look back of what you spent the previous year. This way, you're going to have a good basis. So, for example, if we go back to the cafeteria plan, say, for example, the employee only takes the health insurance. Great. Then they can use that FSA account to pay for their doctors, for their dentist visits, their doctor visits, their trips to the optometrist. Exactly. So it's we both are basically presenting this as a way for really, this is a great benefit for employees.
It is. And I think the other thing that I want to mention just real quickly is that it does help, like prescription drugs. So they're expensive. So it does pay your co-pays for that,
right?
Or also over-the-counter medications.
Exactly, so, yeah.
So many of those over-the-counter medications were once prescriptions. You can purchase those if you purchase them at the counter where you get your prescriptions. They can go on your FSA and they'll come right off. So it also includes any medical supplies, like if you need a cane or you need some kind of a monitoring device for your blood pressure or something like that. It includes all of those, even hearing aids. A lot of people need hearing aids today, and those are covered. So there's a lot of good reasons to try out using a flexible spending account.
And the key word and the crucial word is planning ahead.
Exactly.
So next up on our journey here is health reimbursement arrangements, also known as HRAs. What makes an HRA different?
So everything we've talked about so far is mostly employee dollars. With an HRA, the biggest thing with this, it is employer dollars only. So only the employer can fund the health reimbursement arrangement. The employer gets to set up how they want to reimburse under the HRA. Maybe they only want to reimburse for co-pays or co-pays and co-insurance, or only deductibles, or the first $1,000 they pay, and then after the employee has paid $2,000, then they're going to pay another $2,000. So there are lots of options, but it's all up to the employer. The employer needs to put this in a plan document, which means they often work with an administrator and they write down how they want to reimburse those dollars, and then the administrator will help that to happen. I also want to mention with the HRAs that ICHRA, which is individual coverage, plus the health reimbursement arrangement. So in this, the employee is told, you need to go get individual coverage, and the employer is going to reimburse some part of the cost of those individual coverages using their own health reimbursement arrangement. So again, everything is put down in writing. Employee gets their individual coverage. Employer reimburses based on the rules that they put down under the ICHRA. So HRA, employer dollars only, employees cannot contribute to the HRA.
And so we are going to end our podcast here on our last topic with the health savings account. It's very popular. And why is everybody talking about HSA, Shelley? What is so great about having a health savings account?
Well, a health savings account is popular because the contributions go into the account on a pre-tax basis. And you did call them health savings accounts, HSA. The savings account belongs to me. If my employer puts dollars into the account for me, as soon as they drop them in, they are my dollars. It is my savings account. So that's a nice part of it too, is that once dollars go in, whether I put them in, my employer does, you could contribute to my savings account. As long as we don't go over the maximum, anybody can put money in it. The growth of those dollars are tax-free, so you are able to invest the money that's in your savings account. And as long as you take out the dollars to pay for qualified medical expenses, then they come out and you can spend them on a tax-free basis. So it's the triple savings. It's all three of those. You put it in tax-free, you can have tax-free growth, and you can take it out tax-free. So that is a draw to a lot of people who want to put dollars in, use that as a savings account to pay for expenses as we get older.
Now, withdrawals, they're qualified expenses. They're tax-free, correct?
They are. So all the things that we've already talked about, over-the-counter drugs, paying for your glasses, your hearing aids, deductibles, co-pays, co-insurance. If you save receipts for years and then, you know, let's say 2 years from now, I need money. I have money in my health savings account. As long as I have receipts to match it from before that I haven't used, I can use those to withdraw my own money out of my account when I need it, not right now when I'm still working and making money.
One of the things that I find a lot of people are confused about with health savings accounts is that you also have to be enrolled in a high deductible health plan.
Yes, not only a high deductible health plan, but as the health insurance carriers call it, a qualified high deductible health plan, because you can have a high deductible health plan that doesn't meet the qualified basis to have a health savings account attached to it. And what we're talking about there is a minimum amount of a deductible that an employee must meet under the HDHP that is qualified, that allows them to put pre-tax dollars away in this health savings account or post-tax dollars from somebody else. But generally, you must have that qualified high deductible health plan. And then you can use your employer's setup account. And a lot of employers, when they choose to do this, a carrier will offer a partner plan that allows everybody to have their own health savings account. And it makes it easy for the employer to drop those dollars in on a quarterly basis or a semi-annual basis into everybody's account. But if I want my own account at my own bank or credit union, you can walk into your bank or credit union. You have to prove that you have the qualified high deductible health plan, and then your bank or credit union can set up your savings account, because these accounts are portable. So if I do it with my employer and then I leave that employment, I take that health savings account with me. It's mine. I can put it into another one, so I could open one with my bank. So they are a bit flexible. And as long as you put them in pre-tax, use them for qualified expenses coming out, it's a win for everybody.
You and I were talking previously about HSAs because we're nerds and we were talking about it as, you know. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about, or that actually we were already talking about, who would this make sense for? Like, for example, we were using the two examples because you and I are in group health insurance and we get questions like this all the time. I had one where we had a factory worker. They were young. They don't use the benefit that their employer offers. I said, you know what? This is a good idea for you would be an HSA. So my question is, who would HSAs really benefit? How would it work for different types of people that we encounter?
So I think a high deductible health plan is a good thing for the person that you just described, someone who's young, who's not using a lot of their health insurance, because the cost is very low. And that's what they want. They're not going to use their plan, so they're not going to worry about that $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 deductible, or maybe even higher, that they might need to use if they were older and regularly accessing all of these benefits. So it's a good savings way of having health insurance, but it's cheaper. Also, from the other perspective, it is a way to save additional dollars. So for some of us, it's a way to put as much as you can in this health savings account, and you're building up dollars that you know you're going to use as you get older, but right now you don't need them.
Right.
So for an example, in 2026, the maximum amount that an employee can put in their HSA is $4,400. And they can, like I said, anybody can put that in. It can be me. It can be my employer. It can be my grandma, whomever. The maximum amount is $4,400. There is a catch-up amount. If you're 55 or older, you can put an additional $1,000 in. So $5,400 can go into it. If you're a family, the maximum amount is $8,750. So if you're able to put those dollars away, and if you want to invest them, you can earn additional dollars and you can spend them later or whenever you want to. You can write a check for yourself for all the deductibles that I use during the year and do it this year or next year or whenever you need it. So it's very flexible. You just have to be able to prove, if you were ever audited by IRS, here's what I spent, here's what I took out of my account to cover those. And it can be years away. It's totally up to the employee how they do that.
Excellent. Thank you, Shelley.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And Shelley, thank you. We hope that you found this podcast informative and helpful. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional.